It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Table Talk about our food and how it is grown can't leave out meat. And one of the most popular meats in the world is pork, and obviously that comes from pigs. Well, how those pigs are raised is a mystery to most people anymore, and it's a controversy to some people. Well, our guest today is addressing both sides of this issue. He raises pigs, a lot of pigs, and he is creating communications with consumers to answer their questions and create more transparency about it, exactly how pigs are grown. So I want to welcome Malcolm DeKreiger. And Malcolm, you're a pig farmer. You've got Legacy Farms. You're involved with Belstra Milling and up in DeMott, Indiana. And we're going to talk about something called Fair Oaks Pig Adventure. Welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
How would you describe your pig-raising operation?
The Pig Adventure at Fair Oaks Farms is actually has a farm by the name of Legacy Farms. And Legacy Farms was created about 4 years ago. It's 2,800 sows. And
for those that don't know, it's the mother pig.
Yeah. You know, like some people have tried to think, a sow is a cow, and a boar is a bull. So if you know anything about cattle or you know those words, it kind of helps you get the picture. But we've got a farm with about 2,800 sows, and at that farm this past year, 2016, we produced just a little over 78,000 weaned pigs. Those are not pigs that are ready to go to market, but those are ready to be weaned off from the mother and moved to a different farm for growing and being ready to go to market at some point. So, yeah, this is not a petting zoo. This is a full-sized, very contemporary, both in production techniques and size. This is a very contemporary farm here in the United States, particularly in the Midwest.
78,000 seems like a lot. I'm sure there's some bigger ones, too, in the United States today.
Yeah, in fact, Belstra Milling and myself have ownership in six production companies, and this farm is just average for our other five sow units. Our largest one is about 4,500 sows, and we are preparing construction right now for a sow farm that has a little over 5,000 sows. And so we will be, we are large, certainly many times larger than when I was growing up, but there are farms that have 5,000 to 7,000, and even a couple of them are 10,000. So those are pretty big units, but every time we think that one unit is very big, there's always somebody else that wants to make one just a little bit bigger. That's the way the world goes around sometimes.
Well, and it's one of those things that concerns some people. That just seems like they worry about the bigness, and we're going to talk about that a little bit, because I think what comes with big operations can be big problems. I mean, it can also be problems better handled because there's the scale, I suppose, to take care of the issues and have more expertise available and so forth. But there's the risk involved that if you do goof up, it's a big one. And, you know, I think as an industry, that's something that, you know, we'll talk about in a few minutes, too, is that how you offset those challenges where you get both the opportunities of scale and the challenges of scale. But let's go back to the story on the simple cycle with pigs is that you have sows that are bred so that they're going to have pigs, and they're going to, what is it, 3 months, 3 weeks, and 3 days of gestation. Did I get that right?
That's right. Yeah, 3 months, 3 weeks, 3 days. And if you do a little bit of calculating, that's right around 114 or 115 days of gestation. So that's what a pig has.
And then the pig grows up and is actually a full market size of what, maybe like 250 pounds or so today in 6 months or 5 months?
That's actually a little bigger and about that speed. We are marketing on our other farms these pigs that are raised at Pig Adventure. They are right at about 285 to 300 pounds at right at about 180 days or 6 months. And so their capabilities of growing are outstanding. We have chosen parents that have a lot of growthiness in them and a lot of leanness and meat quality. We don't have GMOs or anything like that, but we select these animals to grow fast. We make sure that they stay incredibly healthy so that they are able to express their genetic potential. And that makes them extremely efficient in how much they need to eat to become so big so quickly.
So, Malcolm, if you get all the way back to the table again, what that results in is the pork chops and pork loins and ham and bacon and all the products that can come from pork, whether you're having it at, Chili's in California or you're having it, at a restaurant in New York or DeMott, Indiana, they're going to get the same levels of quality and consistency. It's not going to be
precisely
a surprise.
Yeah, no, precisely.
Now, I should point out that, there are consumers that seem to do want some surprise or want some specialization, that either in other products, it's at a farmer's market. It's not so much with pork at farmer's markets, but sometimes you find it where somebody will say they've got some really unique breed and a really unique feeding program and so forth, and you can buy it for your, freezer or something like that.
Those who want to provide those very tight niche markets are, they're welcome to do that. That's the entrepreneurial capitalist spirit to try and do things that way.
Well, you are next to one of the largest cities in the nation, just not far from Chicago. Even though you're in Indiana,
No. You're
just outside of Chicago, and there is a.
No, we can be in downtown Chicago in 60 minutes.
Well, in that market, there's I would imagine most everybody has not been on a farm. I mean, there's some that have, but not like when we were growing up, I grew up on a farm, everybody I knew farms and farmers. Again, you're reminded, I think, of this really large population, and from there, I would imagine, there's a lot of questions and concerns, and they hear terrible things about the factory farm, and I think this is probably leading us to open the door about Pig Adventure. We need to describe briefly what is the Pig Adventure, and then Malcolm, kind of why you felt compelled to get this enterprise going.
Certainly. Pig Adventure at Fair Oaks Farms really is a complete breeding to weaning farm on the lower level. 2,800 sows live in about three large buildings, whether they're growing, whether they're pregnant, or whether they're having baby pigs and nursing them. And that lower level would look like any of the other Belster Milling farms and would look like a huge percentage of the large-scale 21st century farms throughout the United States. Then the thing that we have done in conjunction with the Fair Oaks Dairy Adventure is that we have created a museum on the second floor above the pigs, and we have put in like a glass skybox, if you will, on the second floor. So visitors can come into the museum area, the visiting area. They can walk into the barns, and they have a completely sealed, glass-enclosed room that allows them to see, essentially 360 degrees of the pig production down below, They can sit and watch our employees work with the animals. They can watch the baby pigs being born every day. There's no odor that ever gets people. So it's a unique opportunity. In fact, there is nothing like this anywhere in the world that we have found, where so much can be seen on such a large scale by so many people. There are, you know, we are receiving about 80,000 plus paid visitors per year, and many of them are school children, many of them are families with kids, many of them are senior citizen tours. In 1 week, last year in October, we had 10,000 FFA high school children come through. We have entertained people from about 80 different countries around the world, as well as every state and province here in North America. So it is a very exciting and unique way to show people, teach people about how pigs are produced, and frankly, there's some entertainment along the way. And so we kind of call it edutainment.
Let me get back to this transparency, because there's much said about how factory type farms and so forth, people are concerned about them not being transparent. And in fact, I mean, fair to point out, there's been controversy in some states that have passed laws to keep somebody from sneaking into facilities and taking pictures and possibly seeing animals that are not being treated right and posted online. And you've gone totally the other extreme. I mean, when you got glass walls and you've got 80,000 people coming through, I think that it's interesting on the transparency side. And I found myself, Malcolm, thinking about how I would feel if I worked for you and I'm out there working with the pigs and having 80,000 people looking over my shoulder all the time. Is that kind of a challenge for your workers to get used to the fact that you've got all these people kind of up above watching every single thing you do all the time?
You know, there are some of the employees that become a little self-conscious, because let's face it, there's certain things you can't scratch or pick at, like human nature, when you've got, 40 or 50 people looking through the glass walls looking at you. But beyond that little humor, the reality is that the employees really focus on the pigs. And when they're working down there, there's really no self-consciousness about it, because it's all about that care of the pig. You know, whether you're touching the pig and stimulating it for breeding, or whether you're caring for the mother that's the sow that's farrowing or giving birth, or the baby pigs that need to be dried off and warmed up when they're freshly born, or all of those processes of the hands-on the caring for those animals, our people are about the pig, and they do a great job, in spite of people looking over their shoulder, to do exactly what is necessary. And we have found that the tourists are just fascinated by all of those things that go into taking good care of pigs. And so, whether it's a little bit earthy or biological with all the fluids that are part of birthing, or, a live animal, it's okay. And in fact, the kids are fascinated. And oftentimes it's the moms and the teachers or whatever that are kind of going, ew. But it's really, they leave with a huge appreciation, and they leave with a smile on their face. I mean, they'll spend an hour to 2 hours watching and just kind of having their noses pressed to the glass about what's happening throughout the entire facility. So much so, Roger, that we actually, when we're really busy in the summertime, we have a full-time lady walking around cleaning glasses because there's so many smudge marks. So we're tickled by the smudge marks. The more smudge marks, the happier we are.
Well, I would imagine some of your employees liking showing off a little bit too. You must have some that aren't that are natural performers and probably enjoy the fact they got an audience.
Oh, they they love to wave at people, and you know, they're not self-conscious. I wouldn't call them show people, but they're very comfortable. And one of the things that we enjoy them probably the most, and so do the customers, is that we have what I call the pig window. It's a little bit like a bank teller's window, and they will come upstairs behind a biosecure glass, and they'll put on a headset and talk to the people, the tourists, and it gives the people, we're a baby pig, by the way, it gives the people a chance to talk to the farmer, to look at the baby pigs right up close, to have a description of what's going on with a baby pig at that point in its life, what's going to happen with it here in the next day or two, and, you know, where is the farmer from, how did they go to school for this or didn't they? All those things are an opportunity to sit and visit with the farmer, and we really like this because it gives the consumer or tourist a chance to see what's going on behind that glass door, behind the glass, and even more importantly for other farmers, what's going on behind the white steel building wall. You know, that's been part of the problem. They don't have a chance to come out with pigs and say, hey, this is what I do. Now we have a chance to debunk the conspiracy theory and just show people how special our employees are with these animals.
Well, that has to be why you did this, that you're addressing better understanding, and you really invested in telling that story. And I can't think of any place that's telling the story any better than it sounds like you're doing in that operation. And one thing I want to go back to, Malcolm, if people come inside, that's different right off the start from the way people used to think of the way pigs were raised, where people have this image that somehow pigs are outside, they're rooting in the dirt, they're having their pigs outside. And I remember when I built an A-frame when I was at FFA, and when you had those pigs born outside, sometimes half the litter would die because they get squished and weather and all kinds of issues. When people come to your facility, they literally are going inside and they're seeing hogs raised inside on slotted floors. I think you might, could you describe that interior just briefly for people that, again, it's this transition from the image they may have of how pigs are out in orchards or something, and instead they're in buildings here.
Yeah. So in northern Indiana, as is in most all of the Midwest where so many of the pigs are raised, we have big seasons, you know. So even today and this weekend, it's supposed to top out at 95 degrees, and it's going to be pretty humid. That is very difficult on pigs. Heat is a big challenge, and historically they would, you know, try and, if they were outdoors, they would try and create or find a mud hole so that they could lay in the mud, and that mud would be cooler than just baking in the hot sun. Flip side is that we often have winter times where the temperature will be a high of 20 and a low of 0 day after day after day, and if we have snowstorms, pretty rough on an animal outdoors. They slip on ice, they burn off a lot of calories trying to stay warm, they get sick, so that kind of an environmental challenge has been a big deal. On the same token, we have a lot of hawks, foxes, and coyotes out in the countryside, and baby pigs are free game for predators. And when an animal is stressed outdoors, they get sick a lot more often. And so over the last 50 years, a lot of, almost all pigs have been moved indoors just to take care of all those factors. And I might make a very important point, and because it's not very easy to keep employees out there in the same conditions as what I just described. So now we have barns. They're beautifully built. They're very sturdy and strong. They have concrete floors that have slats in them, or slat. We call them slatted floors. and as a pig will defecate, that manure and urine will fall through the floor, they'll walk it through the floor, place stays dry, it stays clean, the pigs will stay white and dry, and so that's very nice. In terms of the indoors, in the wintertime, it's 68 to 70, and frankly, in many farms, particularly for sows, we have a form of evaporative cooling or air conditioning that keeps the temperature at 75 to 80 on a day like today when it's going to be 95. So they've got they're kind of in the lap of luxury in these pig barns today, and our employees are able to not worry about changes of temperatures year round. They work in t-shirts, short sleeve or long sleeve, depending on the season, and that's about it.
Well, I'm sure there's some people that are still skeptical and say, gee, really, could it be that nice? Well, I'm sure one of your answers is come and see. So they're able to. But I want to go back to something you also talked about earlier, and that is what happens to all that poop that, you know, that goes through those floors into, I suppose, like a lagoon. And you were saying that that becomes a source of energy for the farm?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah, so at many farms, there'll be pits underneath the barns, and that manure turns into fertilizer for the crop, which is a very, very good use. And the majority of farms in the United States are going to be doing that. We can't just let it go away. It has to be used. By law, we have to use it for a nutrient. Or, in our case, we will pump it to a digester affiliated with the dairies. And all that manure that goes to the dairy digester goes through their system, and the bacteria in the digester will put off methane. Methane is collected, it's processed a little bit, and then they turn it into compressed natural gas. And so they're running the largest fleet of semi trucks. Compressed natural gas in the United States, and excess is used for running generators to make electricity farms. So it's a wonderful technology.
Well, you mentioned earlier about how animals used to get sick. They still get sick. I'm sure they don't get sick as often as if they're having to be out in 20 below zero winters or something.
Yeah, but
they still get sick, and
that
brings back another issue. I think there's a lot of questions about, and that's antibiotic use, because I assume you have to give sick animals shots, but there's been a controversy about how much of it can be used in feeds, and could you kind of explain that's there's been a change taking place, and I believe there's new FDA rules and guidelines about antibiotic use?
Certainly. Really, the trend over the last 25, 30 years has been for less and less antibiotics being used. Back in the 60s, there were many antibiotics that were approved by the government in the form of feed additives, where you put the medicine right into the feed, and the animals would eat some of that feed every single day, and it would have antibiotics in it. Those were expensive, but they were used quite a bit because of their claim and their approvals. The last number of years, what we have found is that, first of all, we are finding that vaccines are far more effective at preventing disease than antibiotics were for preventing a pig from getting sick. And so we have moved towards vaccines, much like what people have used, moved towards vaccines. You know, I'll give an analogy. It's much better to get a flu shot and prevent yourself from getting the flu than to take a flu medicine once you've already gotten sick. So that is absolutely the analogous strategy that we use for pigs. The only time that our company uses any antibiotic in feed anymore is on small pigs. when baby pigs are weaned off their mother and put into a room of like-weaned pigs, it's very analogous to going to kindergarten. And I've asked many, many parents when they come to visit our tour farm, I said, what's the first thing that happens when you bring all these kids together and they go to kindergarten? And every mother says, well, they all get a cold or they all get sick. And the answer is, yep, and it's the same thing that happens to baby pigs when you put them all together for the first time. You just got to know that that can happen. So for the first number of weeks, probably 3 to 4 weeks, we put them on a veterinarian-prescribed feed antibiotics to prevent them from getting those sniffles or that cold or that bronchitis or the whatever or the intestinal problems. And once they're done with that, then they stayed healthy, then they've already been vaccinated, and the amount of antibiotics that's being fed has really, really dropped off for us and many other people in the last number of years. And so, you know, there's the concern that some people have raised, and there's a lot of debate about whether how valid or how deep the problem could be. But if all the pigs are eating antibiotics, is there a concern about resistance to antibiotics once it reaches people? And by and large, the antibiotics that are being used by animals are not really used in people much anymore, if they ever were. And the other thing that was just created by the federal government is that now all antibiotics that are in feed that have any kind of a human element to it have to be prescribed by the veterinarian for every group of pigs. And so it's a little bit of a paper trail, but the veterinarians have to be responsible, and they write a directive for those batches of feed that are supposed to have the antibiotic in them. So it's a very, very professional process to make sure that the right product is being used on the pig exactly when they need it and nothing more.
Well, there's some that worry that the Food and Drug Administration is not engaged enough in this transition, that it seems too voluntary to them. But does the agency get out in any way? Or there?
Yes. I chuckle because not 3 weeks ago, we spent 3.5 days with our regional FDA inspector, and he went through all of our records, monitoring every single feed with any antibiotics, and he was documenting and checking our paperwork. And so you better believe we are monitored. We are exhaustively monitored to make sure that we're compliant, and that is for any feed, whether it's for our own pigs or anybody else's that we might feed. So it's FDA is there. Now, they may not be there every single year. It's usually, it looks like about a 3-year pattern. But we have to have those records all the time, all the way back. So can't make it up.
Each individual farmer can make lots of different decisions, but if there are any bad apples in the crowd, that hurts for everybody. So
certainly does. And we know that there is no industry is that anybody can name that doesn't have a bad apple. I mean, we won't get into them all, but there are idiots. I mean, they just seem to pop up in every place in the world once in a while, and unfortunately, they give people bad names.
I tell you what, I can figure out one way to solve it. If everybody had to put up a big glass wall and 80,000 people a year were tracking through and taking a look at how they're producing food, it probably would affect the way they do things a little better.
You have to be on your best behavior, I'll tell you that.
I think when you're in the middle of this journey, Malcolm, what makes you the most kind of optimistic about these next few years?
Well, that's a pretty big question.
I know. It's the one I ended with.
Well, you know, look, a couple of different things. And number one is that I still am excited about the United States. Is a wonderful place to raise pigs. It's a because we have the corn, we have the soybean meal, we have the food or the feed ingredients. We have great cost productions. We have learned and have the technologies for efficiency. We are in a great place. Pork is the number one protein in the world. You know, these are buzzwords that everybody loves to spout about. And so, you know, I'm on that bandwagon. I get that. I'll tell you one that people don't think about a lot, and that is we are seeing a growing number of young people who want to go to school to learn how to do pig farming better, and they want to come to work for a company like ours because we are stable, we are thriving, they have opportunities in the future, they have the health insurance to take care of their families, we have the camaraderie across our farms. And that group of young people enthuses me to no end. My son is one of them. He happens now to be 29 years old and well-trained and an executive in our business. But we've got like six or eight other children of our employees that went to school because they wanted to come back to this business. They wanted to come back to this location and to the lifestyle that we have out here in the country. And that is got to be the most energizing thing that any company could ever ask for. And so we're humbled by it. We're excited about it. If anybody thought that agriculture is kind of like a dead-end, boring end of the world or you know, ancient job, could not be further from the truth. And that, to me, is what we are able to provide over and above the food from the pigs.
Well, I tell you what, I can tell from your voice that you're enthusiastic about that, and well, you should be, and I think that's another story that we're going to have to get back to at some point in time. People don't realize that this changing face of agriculture does include opportunities for young people that, in fact, you know, go off to college and want to come back and be a pig farmer. They want to be in other kinds of agriculture and can do it in larger scale operations and have a fulfilling career. I know some people won't buy it, Malcolm. They just fear that there's not a way to have a model for this large scale and progress, but you not only walk the talk, you show the talk. So if people want to know more about the pig adventure, where do they find information?
Website for Fair Oaks Farms is FOFARMS, fofarms.com. And then the other one is BelstraMilling.com, and then there are links to our pig farm out there at Fair Oaks and the Pig Adventure, CRAMILLING.com.
Well, I tell you what, I really appreciate your having this conversation. We were talking to Malcolm DeKreiger, a pig adventure, a pig farmer in northern Indiana. And Malcolm, somebody that's really making a difference. We appreciate what you're doing, and thank you for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Pleasure is mine, Roger. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on SoundCloud, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.